tell me where in the world is
crime in San Diego? Welcome back to Where in the World is Crime in San Diego? I am Adrian.
I am Angie.
And you guys, we've been so busy caught up with Maya Melieta and Larry Melieta's preliminary hearing trial that we weren't able to do a episode for you guys this week. So we're going to have to make it up for you guys this upcoming week with something special. So stay tuned.
So this is going to be Friday and Monday combined because Friday was a very long day with not too much coming out of it. Some important things, but it was enough for us to be able to wait and mash it up together. So we're going to go over Friday and Monday now. So Friday morning opened up with Detective Jesse Vicente, and he works for the Chula Vista Police Department. He was one of the detectives on the case, and he basically covered all the surveillance footage that, you know, neighbors turned in and, you know, even others in like a little bit more spread out in the neighborhood. He testified to all the footage that they can see of Maya leaving to work that morning, getting home that afternoon, the following morning when Larry was backing the car into the driveway, and then how he waited the 45 minutes and then got in the car. And that whole activity is a little weird. It was never before seen footage by the public, but you can see that, like, it's almost a little bit of paranoia, or maybe it's the hindsight, but like, he backs the car in, he locks it right away, he unlocks it to approach it, locks it up again, and then gets in the car and locks it with his clicker, which most people just lock it from the inside with like your door handle, but he locked it with his keys, which is kind of like, seemed a little odd compared to normal behavior. You can also see that later on the afternoon of the 9th, Larry is caught on camera talking to his neighbor around 3 in the afternoon. And he asks his neighbor if he can detail the Lexus for him, because the kids had dirtied it and he just kind of felt like it was just needed to be detailed.
I mean, it's not a strange situation or strange question to ask to have your car detailed.
It's the timing.
It's the timing, and it's the whole what happened before leading into the detail that makes you really question his reasoning or his why detailing it right then and there. I mean, Maya is missing and you're going to worry about detailing your car?
That's exactly the biggest question mark in that. They also testify to how, you know, neighbors volunteered their footage, and a neighbor that's like basically on the back street, like adjacent to the Melietes, gave her surveillance footage, and it had audio, which showed the kids playing in the backyard, and she recognized the voices as those of Maya's kids. So that was just familiarity. And then about 10 minutes later, you can hear the 9 loud bangs that have been analyzed but haven't been confirmed to be gunshots. Like, it's just too difficult. Like, you can't for certain say they're gunshots.
But even then, you can't really know if they came from their residence, too.
It's more the direction of, like, it's 10:30 at night. There's not a lot of other noise going around. And confirming that it's her kids, it just kind of, like, odds are it is at home, but you're right. You can't confirm that.
Yeah, it's really difficult. Watching Vicente's, like, you know, defense, you know, cross-examination, he made Bonita look like a fool or sound like a fool, because all of his questions or all the questions that Bonita was asking, he was like, are you talking about this night? Are you talking about that? What exactly do you mean? I don't understand what you're talking. And even the judge just stepping in, it just really just, Bonita is unprepared.
Well, you have to remember, these detectives are used to going on trial for a lot of their cases. And to have an attorney that is not prepared, that's asking vague questions, it's like trying to fish for an answer or trying to misconstrue whatever they're testifying to and poke holes in their stories, like, they're on defense mode too.
Like, she was trying to make him answer where their defense team is always, since the start, the defense has always been like, Maya left on her own. She wanted to leave Larry. She wanted to leave everything behind, and she wanted to go party it up. And all the answers that she was getting from Vicente were like, no, that's not exactly at all.
Everything was speculation, but she was trying to use it to prove her point, which was nowhere near anything they have in evidence. And that kind of comes up true with the next detective. Detective Ruiz was the Chula Vista detective on the case, but he was more focused on using like internet searches and social media and like trying to figure out, you know, what evidence is out there that kind of matches what they already have and kind of like cross-checking information. But he was also on site to do some of the like searches in the house. So he did testify to, they had a fireplace in their backyard and they found burnt pieces of credit card. And if you remember, Larry had gone into the room and said, oh no, she took her credit cards with her. And they can't prove what credit card it was because obviously it's burnt to a crisp. So the remains of it just tested to be a credit card. There's no way of telling whose name, how old it was, how long ago it was burned. But considering that it was still in the fireplace and there was still some remains, it's estimated to be fairly recent. They also volunteer that like Larry was very, you know, forthcoming from the beginning with his testimonies and cooperation. But they do acknowledge that like all of his text messages before January 9th to Maya's phone were deleted due to storage. And Larry goes as far as to say like, oh, well, I was volunteering additional information, or Bonita's proving this for him. And then the detective says, yes, but he was texting all of his quote unquote evidence to a landline, which was never going to get there. And then when asked to reproduce it, he had already deleted it because he was so sure that he had already sent it in. Which makes no sense.
What I found interesting is this detective, Ruiz, he was the one that actually drove the Lexus from the Meletes family house to Chula Vista PD.
He had it towed. He never drove it.
Oh, yeah, that's right. He had it. He did have it towed.
Bonita did try to prove that if he was in the car, then he would have tampered with evidence. And then maybe that just shifts everything.
Yeah. But then he also took the laptops. There's like a MacBook Air Pro that belonged to Larry. And on there, he was the one that was investigating like the histories and all this.
And they also searched some of his work computers to see if any of the searches that he wasn't doing at home, like he might have been doing the same ones at work or something different. So they did like coincide those as well.
Yeah, there was just a lot of stuff.
They did also mention that at one point there was someone in Vegas who ran into a woman that looked a lot like Maya. And she was fairly drunk and she asked for help to call a 619 number. This couple was like either on their honeymoon or vacation. They lived in Hawaii. They got back to Hawaii a couple days later and saw Maya all over the news and decided to call in the tip and say, we saw a woman that looks a lot like her. She asked for a 619 number. The detectives called the casino. They asked for footage. They asked for the phone number and they weren't able to provide it. So all they have is this area code, which San Diegans are famous for going to Vegas for the weekend or for a quick getaway. So to say that a small petite Asian woman had a 619 number isn't exactly groundbreaking.
Yeah, it's not like, oh my gosh, this person is Maya. It's like it could have been.
But Bonita really sunk her teeth into this one to try to prove that there was a chance that she was in Vegas, even though this couple called days later and they called just out of precaution. Like they said, like, I have a good feeling. But then again, they were on their honeymoon and they were probably drinking just as heavily. So if there's no camera footage, there's no proof of an encounter. I mean, can you really base anything off of it?
No, you can't.
So this cross-examination took so long that it actually took the remainder of Friday and then part of Monday to get through. But she just really wanted to prove that human trafficking could have been a potential as to why Maya just up and left. Monday morning, we started with a detective by the name from the district attorney's office. His last name was Gridley. And he came in with a bombshell that nobody saw coming. Maya had a secret Instagram, which her Instagram name was Sailor Moon, and it was really cute, besides the point. and she was using that to manage her affair. So he did confirm that she was in a romantic relationship with her coworker, Jamie, who we've heard that name a couple times already. And she only had one follower that she communicated with, and that was Jamie on this account. And she used this Instagram as like her diary to publish like how bad her marriage was. So she would post like black and white photos of her looking really sad, or she'd post screenshots of her conversations with Larry, or just so many different proofs of just how bad this was getting.
And she only had one follower?
She only had one follower that she talked to.
Okay. Like,
yeah, it was basically just the only person she communicated with was Jamie on this account. It was private. It was just set to her, but it was more of like a diary.
And Larry had no idea that this was even out there?
Well, it seems like he did know, because at one point he took over her social media passwords.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think he learned of this until after.
Wow. That's crazy.
Well, cross-examination for this portion hasn't gone in yet. So we're going to find out a little bit more about what they know on this. Right now, it was just him basically setting up that his job is to go through all the records, the cell phone records, the social media records, email records, and like clean them up and try to put the pieces together. And he did just that. He also went through their Google searches on both Larry and Maya. And he found that Larry had Googled a lot of things for a subliminal, how to get your wife to subliminally like listen. Does subliminal noises work on children? He looked up a lot of drugs that basically ended up being sedatives. There's a text message conversation between him and Maya where Maya's like, "Why am I so drowsy? Every time you give me vitamins, I feel like this." And then he's like, "I'm only giving you half the dose. I take the same ones you do. I should be giving you two of each instead of one. Which is really weird because like all of these searches, and then who knows what he was actually giving her.
Well, yeah, because he worked in the hospital. So he knows he has to be a little bit of a chemist to kind of know what side effect gives for what kind of medication or pills.
He had also told his boss and longtime friend of like 19 years. He confided in him a lot about the marriage, and there was a lot of like messages leading up to where like she's asking for divorce again. She, you know, things aren't good, things are bad. And then, you know, she's getting ready to leave me again. And there's messages where like his boss is like, "Hey, where are you?" And he's like, "Oh, I'm on my way." And then those days that he never shows up to work.
Mm-hmm.
They also went through his phone records to see if it was normal for him to like leave his phone off for 12 hours or, you know, have it die for a day or two, you know, like just checking the pattern. And they went back about 6 months and they went 6 months forward. So about a year total. And that pattern was completely like it was a once in a year.
Of him not having his phone for like
having active. It off for an entire 12 hours. And during those 12 hours, they can see all the attempts at phone calls that were coming in. It was from Maya's brother, JP, from his family, from his aunt, from his uncle, his dad, his boss. Some of Maya's family calling in to see like if he knew where he or she was. So that was pretty crazy. But the biggest thing we learned was about Maya having the multiple social medias. Also about how she was doing a lot of Google searches since August and on. About, you know, how much welfare was she, or how much child support was she'd have to pay. How much alimony would she have to pay? How much is a mortgage? She was starting to prep herself. She also signed up for a divorce workshop. Basically, like, trains you on, like, how to transition your kids and how to transition out of a divorce. So that was through the family lawyers that she was looking at. She had set up two different consultations for that same week. I think she still wasn't sold on who she was going to go with. Because she did have her last phone call was to the second lawyer that she had wanted to meet with and kind of like.
Which would have been January 12th. That one appointment?
No, there was one more after that. So she made one more call at 5 p.m. So that phone call is like around 1:30.
Oh, okay.
And then she made one more at 5 and it was for a law firm in Carlsbad. And it was saying to inquire what the steps were and to get a consultation. They also were able to prove that one of three things happened to her phone at 1:25 on January 8th, 1:25 a.m. It was either it turned off, the battery died, or the phone was destroyed. Because after that, nothing ever came up as activity. So what they pointed out is that when you're even opening an application, you always get that notice of like, can we track your location or can we track your activity? So anytime you open anything on your phone, you're signaling somewhere because you're grabbing data. And that's exactly what happened with her phone, where her last conversation was like at 8 p.m., but her last activity, whether it was opening an app or turning something on or off or like logging out of something, was at 1:25 a.m. on the 8th. This one was written on Christmas Eve of 2020. And it was from Maya, from one email address to herself to another one. And the subject was leave. He's never going to change. He will always control you, will or will not interact with anyone. He will never get past what happened in 2020. Leave. And that's in all caps.
And sorry, this is a Maya email that was...
to herself.
To herself. Oh, mm-hmm. To herself.
It will just be as difficult as saying you might as well change the course of your life now rather than regret not doing so 10 years from now. Don't be afraid of him not being a part of your life. He will always be a part of your life as the father of your children. He's just not a good husband to be a part of your life. Great dad, not so as a husband.
Okay. So I take that where she really is moving on. She's decided that she is going to get a divorce. And she agrees that, you know what, like, and it happens. Okay, people are not healthy in a relationship together, but someone can be a good father or a good parent. And that does happen. But as a couple, like, okay, like they're trying to part ways because it's not working. So I don't think Maya, like, if the defense is trying to say that she's just leaving her family behind. These emails clearly show that no, it's like Larry was the issue. Their marriage was a problem, not the family.
Yeah, it was toxic for her and she needed to get out. She was putting herself first. They compared the difference between the social medias, and on her original Facebook, Instagram, like those accounts, the ones she had public and accessible to everybody and like all her friends and family, she was very like, you know, normal. She was family oriented, talking about trips, talking about accomplishments at work, like all the things you typically share on your social media. On these secret accounts that she had, it was set to private. And like I said, it was mostly a diary. It was started back in February of 2020. And obviously through the months, the post got more and more revealing. But it was her way of also being able to kind of vent a little bit, maybe have like a safe space. Even if nobody else was seeing it, it just made her feel heard. It's also how she was able to connect with Jamie literally every single day or on a daily basis for the most part. It seems that in December of 2020, they decided to... Larry went and told his wife about the affair. She obviously was very upset. Jamie had a baby on the way. And they just decided, you know what? Let's just focus on our own lives. Like, us isn't a possibility. And we just need to, like, figure out how to handle our own situations and, like, take some space. So they would still check in on each other, but it wasn't as romantic. It was more like, hey, I just want to know you're doing okay. Like, I still care for you. And they actually messaged the morning of the 7th. And days leading up, Jamie had told her, like, I worry for your safety and I'm worried that like Larry's going to hurt you. And she's like, no, I'll be fine. Don't worry about me. I'm good. Like, I can handle myself.
It's going to be very interesting this next day, how it's going to turn out, because the defense is going to cross-examine everything. And they're definitely going to push the whole like affair issue.
And this affair had been denied by everybody in her life up until this point.
Yeah.
So to know there's actual like proof of conversations. And here's the thing. The detective says that, like, yes, the conversation was a little on the sexual, flirty, you know, romantic side, but it was also very deep, where Jamie was having a lot of struggles in his personal life and Maya had someone that she could vent to, and like both of them were helping each other get through a really dark time in their lives. So it was very emotional and heavy.
Do you consider just talking an affair, or would it actually have to be like physical contact? Is that
no? They would like exchange photos. There was definitely like a physical relationship there, mm-hmm. but it wasn't just a physical relationship. Like there was definitely an emotional bond that, you know, tied them together. And obviously, these are private thoughts. So they didn't disclose any of what the messages actually said. They would just summarize the gist of what we needed to know.
Well, I wonder if Jamie's going to take the stand. You know?
Not in this one. So there are two more witnesses for the prosecution side. And they are also investigators. So we'll hear from them, hopefully, all in one tomorrow. Because most preliminary cases last 7 to 10 days. And this one looks like it's going for about a whole 3 weeks at this point. Just because the defense also has their witnesses that they need to bring forward. So depending on how the cross-examination goes tomorrow. So there was a point in today's court where Bonita decides to start asking the detective a weird string of questions, like how he collected the evidence and how did they preserve it? And was he making the assumption, or was there enough evidence for him to think that, like, to support his theory? And the judge literally stops her and goes, "That's why I'm here. Like, I'm going to listen to everything and I will determine if there's enough for this to go to trial." But she was trying to say, like, well, if they're basing their evidence and they don't have enough, then like, why are we like, you know, why are we even here? It was just really funny to watch the judge, because his patience is literally like goals.
Listening to Friday in the afternoon when I had listening to it, like with the detective, Reese, both the prosecutor and the defense were just always like objection, hearsay, objection, overrule, like objection, like irrelevance. Like it was just going back and forth. And then the judge was just like, "I did not know that." Like you can just see that just the judge is so like, he's like, "You guys are making this more difficult now." And
because they're arguing like if they're in trial when the trial hasn't even, like, this is just to get to trial. Like, yeah, you'll have your chance to go through these. So I think they kind of already have an idea of the yes, because the prosecutors today said not in this courtroom, but for the next trial, we do have this person as a witness. And the judge was like, "Okay." Like, he didn't like flinch or say anything. He was like, "All right, cool. Like, let's keep moving."
Well, yeah, because you're not going to play all your cards. You're just going to show the good hand.
Yeah. So there are some people that they do plan to have as witnesses, but that did not, their names came up this time, but they didn't use them yet because they just need to meet a threshold. But it was pretty funny that they're like, "Okay, well, tomorrow, hopefully, like those first two witnesses, we can be done by the morning." And then they're like, "Well, based on cross-examination," he's like, "You know what? 50-50. Never mind. We'll just see how it goes. Like, I'm not going to bank on anything." And I was like, "Oh, man, that's basically rough." What this whole trial has been, though. So,
yeah. Well, that's a huge bombshell. Thank you for keeping us updated with that major bombshell with the detective confirming that Maya did have some kind of an affair with Jamie.
Like, which, wow. I was really hoping. I mean, you can't blame her. Her marriage was terrible. Like, you know, I really can't imagine what she had to suffer through. But her family was so adamant that I was just hoping that they really were having a leg to stand on. But,
well,
we'll see what comes next. You guys, thank you for being patient. I promise that we will make it up with a really good case for next week. There is some really interesting stories coming up within the next couple weeks. We've been working really hard at like making them as exciting and fun fact and enjoyable as possible. But yeah, stay tuned.
Tell me, where in the world is
Crime in San Diego?